Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. Hope you're all enjoying the nice holiday weekend. Hope our garden's getting watered and lots of sunshine too. My name is Greg Sandin. I'm this morning's board rep. We have a couple of announcements this morning about church life activities, but please also read the announcements listed in the order of service and take the order of service home to refer back to. One additional announcement I have is on our own auction item at Ledge Park. We've got an auction activity tomorrow, meeting some families at Ledge Park, and a couple families couldn't attend, so we're opening it up to other families that might be interested. See myself or my wife, Kristen, after the service if you're interested. It's 10 to 2 tomorrow. I invite you to greet those around you. All right. If you're visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign our guest ledger on the visitor's table in the foyer. There are a variety of information on that table about our church and Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to anything that interests you. I'll be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church or if you've been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member. I'd be happy to talk to you about that. If you are visiting us this morning with your children, it is our custom for our children to remain with us until after the story for all ages, at which time they can go to their RE classes. Our class year is essentially done, but there are RE activities planned for the day. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you would like to go along and observe your child's class, please do so. Our nursery is just right outside the doors on my right and across the foyer. Classes will end right at 11:15, at which time you can pick up your children from their classes. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have brought guests today, we would be pleased if you would introduce them. If any guests have brought themselves and feel comfortable introducing themselves, now would be the time to do that. When we have our Reverend Hobart here, we'd like to also welcome visitors to join us in his office with a few members to talk for coffee and chat. So if there are any guests, I'm not seeing any of hand, but if there are some, we can meet in his office right after the service and have a discussion. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. The conversation corner is a good place to further discuss the topic of the day, and now is the time to put your cell phones on silence mode. I hope you find this morning service enlightening. Our speaker today is our own Reverend James Hobart. Thank you.
We are a community of liberal religion, a congregation, a church, a people of free faith. We extend this invitation to all who come here. Join us in our common religious endeavor. We offer the hospitality of our space, our time, our effort to all religious seekers. And we ask of you only what we expect of ourselves: an open mind, a generous heart, an awakened conscience, a gracious appreciation of differences in experience and belief, a common conviction that service is the true measure of religion, the trust that the transformation of persons and society toward greater justice, fuller compassion, and better understanding is our common and our great religious vocation. If you are persuaded to this demanding and rewarding religious way, we welcome you into this community. Come, let us join our hearts, our minds, our voices in common worship. We light our flame, our chalice, as a symbol of our resolve to keep our religious community bright and vital and alive. Our opening hymn is number 583. No, it's one of a 138, excuse me. Our world is one world, and I invite you to rise in body or in spirit.
Thank you.
please join us for our congregational hymn gathering. It's number 583 in the hymnal. The young dead soldiers do not speak.
Nevertheless, they are buried in still houses. Who has not heard them?
They have a silence that speaks for them at night and when the clock counts.
They say, "We were young, we have died, remember us."
They say, "We have done what we could, but until it is finished, it is not done."
They say, "We have given our lives, but until it is finished, no one can know what our lives gave."
They say, "Our deaths are not ours, they are yours. They will mean what you make them."
They say, "Whether our lives and our deaths were for peace and a new hope, or for nothing, we cannot say. It is you who must save us."
They say, "We leave you our deaths, give them their meaning."
"We are young, as they say, we have died, remember us."
Light's green. Now it's working. So if there are those who are young or young in spirit who would like to come down here and join me, we have a story this morning. Okay, good morning to everybody. Well, as we've already heard in earlier in the service, tomorrow, May the 28th, which is the last Monday in May, is the National Memorial Day holiday. This American holiday is observed every year, the last Monday in May. What is Memorial Day? Yeah. Okay, it's when we honor the soldiers. Mm-hmm. So, what we remember is the soldiers on Memorial Day. In the beginning, Memorial Day was the day set aside to honor those persons who died in the Civil War. And it was not called Memorial Day. It was called Decoration Day. People went to the cemeteries where those who died in the war were buried, and they decorated their graves with flowers and American flags. Before the Civil War even ended, women in the South began to go to the cemeteries in April to decorate the graves of the Confederate soldiers killed during the war. It is thought that the first Union Decoration Day occurred on May the 1st, 1865. That's 147 years ago. Anybody remember 147 years ago? No, I don't think even people as old as me were around then. It was just a few weeks after the end of the Civil War, and freed slaves in Charleston, South Carolina, organized a May Day ceremony to honor the Union soldiers buried in Charleston at what is now called Hampton Park. 10,000 people attended this ceremony, including 3,000 children. And they brought flowers to place on the graves, and the day was called Decoration Day. The first Decoration Day held in the North was in 1868. On May the 5th, 1868, the town of Ironton, Ohio, held the first parade for Decoration Day, and that parade has been held in Ironton every year since. They'll hold it again tomorrow. Soon, cities and towns across America were holding Decoration Day observances. And in 1882, Decoration Day began to be called Memorial Day. During the Civil War, more than 91,000 persons from Wisconsin served in the Union military, and more than 12,000 of them died, almost 3,800 in battle or from wounds in battle, and even more than that, 8,000 from disease. Have you seen any of the monuments that were erected to honor those who served and those who died during the Civil War? Nobody in the room has seen those. Oh, yes, a few people, especially the grown-ups, have seen them. Well, these memorials and monuments were erected in towns and cities all across Wisconsin. Does anyone here know the town closest to Heartland that has a Civil War monument? Delafield. Who knew that? Okay. Delafield has a Civil War monument, which was erected as a memorial for the memory of three Cushing brothers who fought in the war, and it is in Cushing Memorial Park, and it was erected in 1911. Now, what other town close to Heartland has Civil War memorials? Waukesha. And there are three Civil War memorials in Waukesha. Two of these are in Cutler Park. Anybody remember seeing them in Cutler Park? And there's another at the Prairie Home Cemetery. Well, in the beginning, Memorial Day was held to honor those who served and who died in the Civil War. But beginning almost 100 years ago now, following World War I, it became a day to honor all who had served, especially those who had died in wars. But it was not until 1971 that Memorial Day became an official United States holiday that was held on the last Monday in May. And this year, Memorial Day is tomorrow, May the 28th. Well, just as it changed from a day to honor Civil War dead and Civil War veterans, it has now changed that it honors people other than the people who fought in wars. It's become a day to remember all who have died. Some of these people that we remember and honor worked for peace. And some of these persons are our relatives, mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, and some are just good friends. So who do you remember today? Here at Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church, we are honoring all the persons we have known who are important to our lives, as well as the many more that we don't even know who are also important to our lives. Now, do we have a lantern? No lantern today. Okay, so we will ask the young people to go off to the RE place. And there are no classes today. There's some activity planned for everybody. And as you go out, we will sing hymn number 413 as we leave this friendly place. Thank you.
enter into a time now of thoughtful reflection, and if that's when we share our great joys or deep concerns with one another, and if you have a joy or concern you'd like to share, the usher will bring you a microphone. Please tell us your name, and I'll light a candle for your honor your joy or concern. And first I'll light our memorial candle, and of course, given this weekend, our memorial candle would be in memory of all those who have served and died for our country.
And John, this is Jim. If you would light a candle for the veterans that returned with physical and psychological wounds.
Hi, this is Lisa. If you could light a candle for my grandmother, she passed away last weekend. She will be remembered by the family.
Hi, this is Chris. Could you light a candle of concern for Beth's sister, who is suffering with severe depression right now?
Could you please light a candle for those that died in the wars but weren't necessarily fighting on our side, on the American side?
Thank you.
I'd like to light a candle for the beautiful rain that we had the last couple days. You know, every year it's a little different, and you kind of dread a horrible drought, and we got such good rain. So I'll light a candle for that, and then I'll light one last candle for the joys and concerns we keep in our hearts.
Let us join our hearts and minds in a period of meditation and reflection. This is the day that we are given. There is pure grace in this gift. We have done nothing to create it or to deserve it. And yet this is our day, a gift to savor and to serve. Day by day, we are given opportunities to enjoy the world's bounty and beauty. And we are given opportunities, too, to serve the world's suffering and humiliation. Today, let us remember with gratitude our religious inheritance. Let us honor all those who in their day, often at personal risk and sacrifice, served the cause of religious freedom and the way of human dignity and worth. We are called to this religious cause and way today. In gratitude, let generous offerings from our resources and talents support our church's mission faithful service toward the world's well-being. In the continuing service of the generations rests an assurance. The way of human dignity and the cause of religious freedom will be present tomorrow, lighting the way for our children and for our children's children and for generations beyond our reckoning. And now let us each continue in silence in the spirit of meditation and reflection and prayer. Amen. Our hymn is number 110, Come, Children of Tomorrow, and I invite you to rise in body or in spirit. Before Memorial Day, my wife Nan and I were in Washington, D.C. for a long weekend visit with our daughter who lives there. And that Friday, we took the traditional tourist walking tour around the mall and the tidal basin. I'm sure many of you have done that. We stopped at the Washington Monument and the Jefferson Memorial and the Lincoln Memorial. We passed the Vietnam Memorial and the Korean War Memorial, all of these familiar sites that we have visited many times. And this time, for the first time, we visited the new Franklin Delano Roosevelt Memorial. And I was very impressed and deeply moved by this tribute to President Roosevelt and the changes that he brought to our country in service to its people. And this time, for the first time, we also made our first visit to the World War II Memorial, I don't know how many of you have had that opportunity. Frankly, I was not impressed. I found it very ordinary. But I was impressed by the presence of perhaps 24 World War II veterans touring the memorial. At that time, funds had been raised across the country to bring World War II veterans from around the country to visit the memorial, which honors their service. Each of these men wore a t-shirt identifying him as a World War II veteran. Each had been assigned his own personal tour guide. Those who were able-bodied walked. Those who were not able-bodied were in wheelchairs. I observed these elderly men, the youngest of them in their 80s, others in their 90s, as they moved around the site. And I sensed their wonder and their delight at being there and being honored there. It seemed to me that they were both humble and proud at the same time. I spoke to several of the men, thanking them for their service, and I watched as others spoke to them. Several groups of teenagers were visiting the memorial during their high school trips to the District of Columbia, and each of these groups was identified by its own brightly colored t-shirt. I think they didn't want to lose anybody, and with brightly colored t-shirts they could keep track of them. There were deep blue shirts and flaming red and bright green and brilliant yellow. I watched as two of these groups interacted with three or four veterans. And these elderly men appeared both amazed and shy in the face of the attention from these teenagers. As for the teenagers, it seemed to me these young men and women could hardly have been more surprised if they had encountered George Washington or Thomas Jefferson or Abraham Lincoln walking around their memorials. The thought of World War II was about as remote to them as the Civil War or the American Revolution. I felt pride and gratitude and humility and amusement as I looked upon these conversations, and I felt tears in the corners of my eyes as I observed this lively meeting across the generations. Nearly 70 years before, these now elderly American citizens had gone off to war as young men, many of them youths no older than the high school students they now were meeting. I shall never forget this remarkable day, nor my sense of privilege that I was part of it. In person or in memory, such vivid meetings, heavy, laden with meanings, are essential to our personal identity as Americans, as citizens of this nation, as citizens of the world, as persons and as a people. Encounters such as these speak to our common humanity and our shared experience, intertwined as it is with the honor and with the disgrace that has occurred in this nation, with bright achievement and with dismal failure, with noble sacrifice and with unspeakable horror. That day I wondered, and today I still wonder, 70 years from now, will there be anything resembling this experience for the veterans of our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan? And it seems to me very unlikely. And more alarming, the young men and women who have returned alive from these wars are not receiving from this country the support they need and they deserve in getting reoriented and reorganized into American society and culture. And that is a national disgrace. It's happened also with the veterans from Vietnam and others of our wars. Archibald MacLeish says of those who perished in war, "The young dead soldiers do not speak. They have a silence that speaks for them at night and when the clock counts. They say, whether our lives and our deaths were for peace and a new hope, or for nothing, we cannot say. It is you who must say this. They say, we leave you our deaths, give them their meaning." Archibald MacLeish wrote these words in his poem, The Young Dead Soldiers, first published in 1948. They have a silence that speaks for them. In the summer of 1993, Nan and I spent 3 weeks driving through the southeastern United States. We visited family and old friends, stopping at most of the places where I spent my childhood and youth. Before we crossed the Mississippi River to head west to Denver, we explored a number of historic sites on or near the river. We drove from the Louisiana Bayou Country, where I lived as a little boy, in Lafayette and Thibodaux, north to Vicksburg, which was the site of a year-long Civil War siege by Union boats and soldiers. And then we drove to Shiloh in Tennessee. At Shiloh, or Pittsburgh Landing, as the Union called it, 100,000 Union and Confederate soldiers engaged in what at that time was the bloodiest battle of the Civil War. In 2 days, April the 6th and 7th, 1862, 100,000 Union and Confederate soldiers fought there. Nearly 3,500 died. There were 24,000 casualties, one of every four combatants. And when it was over, nothing decisive had been settled at Shiloh. The war went its brutal way, and by the surrender at Appomattox 3 years later, it is estimated that 360,000 Union combatants and 320,000 Confederates had perished. That is 680,000 of deaths in a nation in which the population at that time was only 31 million people. And these are all estimates. There may have been more deaths. Nan and I spent the day touring the sites of the battle and the National Cemetery, where the Union dead are buried. The Confederates are not buried there because the Southerners would not allow it. However, north or south, Archibald MacLeish speaks for them, and he speaks to us. They say our deaths are not ours, they are yours. They will mean what you make them. I am a Southerner and a student of American history. Virtually my whole life I have known about Shiloh and Vicksburg, about Bull Run and Antietam and Sharpsburg, about Chickamauga and Gettysburg and other battle sites of the Civil War. My mother's grandfathers both served the Confederate cause, and my father's served in the Union. I do not know that any of my people were at Shiloh. However, I do know that directly or indirectly, my relatives opposed and confronted and perhaps shot at one another somewhere in this dreadful war. The rolling wooded countryside at Shiloh lies between the Tennessee and the Mississippi rivers, and it is still largely a rural and agricultural country. The former battlefield now lies serene and quiet. On the day of our visit, we heard only the gentle wind and the sound of birds and insects. A canopy of trees covers much of the land, and as we moved across this pastoral setting, we stopped at memorials to the state-raised regiments of the Civil War. All of the regiments of the Civil War were state-raised. And these monuments were built on the exact locations where the men of Wisconsin and Iowa and Illinois and Michigan and New York and Massachusetts and other states fought. On that day, 131 years after Shiloh, we knew exactly where these men encamped and fought, some frightened, some courageous, some injured, some dead. In Edgar Lee Masters' Spoon River Anthology, the character Nolt Hoheimer speaks for the Civil War dead. He says, "I was the first fruits of the Battle of Missionary Ridge. When I felt the bullet enter my heart, I wished I'd stayed home and gone to jail for stealing the hogs of Colonel Trinnery, instead of running away and joining the army. Rather 1,000 times the county jail than to lie under this marble figure with wings and this granite pedestal bearing the words pro patria. What do they mean anyway?" At Shiloh, Nan and I heard about the generals and the officers and many of the men who served there. We knew the skirmishes and the major engagements. We had read their letters home and their memoirs. Shiloh and the Civil War are part of what shapes us, north and south, east and west in these United States, united in terms of our common identity after the Civil War as we never were before the war. Shiloh and the Civil War are deeply etched in our common memory as a people and as a nation. Along with the wounded and the dead, many of whom, like Nolt Hoheimer, wished that they'd stayed at home, along with these, slavery and sovereign regionalism were casualties of the war. And yet today, the consequences of slavery and regionalism still are not resolved in the United States. Modern racism and regional chauvinism still infect our nation's social and political life and our very souls. Today we are alternately engaged in addressing these issues and forgetful that we are both benefactors and victims of our history. The full memory of this honored and blighted national story is part of our experience of what is sacred and what is not sacred in the United States. The more we know and the more we appreciate and understand our common story, our experience as a people, and the impact of our experience on our contemporary lives, the more we can claim this experience as our own. Our full national reality, beautiful and blighted as it is a source of a shared memory and a shared experience that takes on the human quality of a shared sacred reality. Sacred. This is not a word that can be captured and tamed. It is big and it is broad and it is deep. The thought and the experience of the sacred leads us to regions that we don't even comprehend. It is a powerful word, and because its power is often abused, it can be a dangerous word. But if we ignore it because it is finally out of our control, we lose the use of a human sense that over the millennia has balanced the haughty powers of our intellects. The human sense of the sacred, I believe, is the awareness and the humility that allows us to recognize and to be moved by our knowledge of what has gone before us, our consciousness of what surrounds and encompasses us. Our sacred awareness is a fusion of our comprehensions, mythical, historical, scientific, and personally experienced. It is an affirmation of what has given our life, a remembrance of what has sustained our lives. And it is exactly this which Nan and I experienced at Shiloh one beautiful, serene summer day. At places like Shiloh and in Washington, D.C., we are never the same after these experiences as we were before they occurred. And our encounters with the sacred in places, in times, and in events is transformative and lasting because we become part of profound shared events. We experience, we participate, we share, we tell the story, and we remember. And it may be Lexington or Shiloh, or the Lincoln Memorial, or the Vietnam Memorial, or it may be Stonewall, or Selma, Wounded Knee, or Homestead. It may be Pullman, or Haymarket, or Ludlow. It may be Dallas in 1963, or Memphis in 1968. It may be Kent State, or Southern University. It may be the 1963 March on Washington, or the Million Man March, or the Million Mom March. It may be protests in Chicago against immigration policies, or just last week, the Occupy movement's protests against the multiple abuses and indignities against the middle class and the poor, the 99%. These, all of these, are the times and places and events when our personal lives merge with our lives as citizens. And these are the times and places and events where contemporary meaning intersects with historic meaning. This is where individual meaning and common meaning come together with integrity and with power capable of transforming our lives and the life of the world. This experience, a common, vivid, luminous quality, is what we are called to celebrate on Memorial Day. This holiday, this holy day, is associated with honoring the deeds and sacrifices of those who have died in the military service of our nation. However, remembering and honoring those who served and sacrificed and died for our nation need not be restricted to people in military service. Our memory can be, should be, broader than that. Our experience of what is sacred meaning what is worth remembering and honoring, should be deeper than that. Service to the nation and to the world can be found and discovered and invested through peace action too. And these sacred meanings and memories are genuine, though they are often overlooked and denied, they are denounced and forgotten. The abuse of power, the perpetuation of violence and destruction, the dealing of oppression and death may be better met through the power of peaceful, nonviolent resistance. And it is the achievement of the American peace movement and the anti-war movement and the civil rights movement which testify to the power of nonviolent resistance. Memory, remembering, invest these experiences too with sacred meaning. Hannah Arendt has written about the crucial central place of memory in historical affairs. She notes that if a mathematical formula is lost or forgotten, it is likely that someone someday will recover it. General abstract reasoned ideas are like that. They have an immortal quality about them. However, if an historic event is forgotten or distorted, it is probably lost forever. Historic events are unique and unpredictable. You cannot reason your way to them. Memory and its many interpretations of the facts is necessary for historic events to survive over the generations. And this is exactly why stories and narratives and autobiographies and historical accounts, along with legends and fables and myths, are so important. The histories and the myths of every culture and people are testimony to their positive and negative potential. And we can turn to the Bible or the Quran or the Upanishads, to the Greek myths and tragedies, to Shakespeare or Archibald MacLeish. These are only a few examples of this universal human experience. And so are the Declaration of Independence and the Gettysburg Address. And I have a dream. Pro Patria, Nulthammer asks, what does it mean? Throughout human history, women and men have been called, sometimes unjustly. Men and women have been chosen, often courageously, to sacrifice their futures and their lives in the service of their people. And the causes have not always been honorable, but the results have changed the world. Pro Patria, for the fatherland, for the people, for the common good. Men and women have sacrificed for their descendants throughout human history, and we owe it to them, and we owe it to our descendants to remember them and to tell their stories and to honor their sacrifice. We are their descendants, and when we stand with them in our shared humanity, we stand on sacred ground. For to make sacred is to set apart, to dedicate, to regard with reverence. When the bloody battlefield of Gettysburg was dedicated as a burial ground on November 19, 1863, Abraham Lincoln spoke words that have haunted our common national memory for nearly 150 years. You no doubt will all remember, and some of you may be able to recite word for word what he said there. It is for us, the living, rather be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have so far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. Lincoln, Archibald MacLeish, the young dead soldiers they both honored, these are all now dead, now silent, and on Memorial Day we remember them through our solemn words and in our silent reflection. May we be worthy bearers of these mighty words, upholding their meaning through our service to a nation and a world desperate for this freeing message. Amen.
Thank you, Jim, for helping us remember the meaning of this holiday weekend. It's easy to think of weekends and holidays as being all fun times, but there is certainly a lot of meaning in Memorial Day weekend. So this is a time in our service where we have a chance to offer our own reflections and insights on the sermon. And so the usher will bring you a mic if you raise your hand and tell us your name and offer your comments, please remembering the different perspectives that we represent. And so I'll take the liberty of offering the first comment is, when you were talking about the numbers of the Civil War dead relative to the population, I did a little math, and in for today's population, that would be equivalent to about 3 million dead, or no, I'm sorry, 6 million dead for today. And it's encouraging, I think, when we think about that, that as the generations go by, the numbers of dead become increasingly horrific. And so I don't know the exact number of dead in the Iraq-Afghan wars, but I think it's in the single-digit thousands. And so I think we're making progress, and as well, not only for our military, but for civilians, whereas in World War II, on both sides of the conflict, whether it be the sinking of ships or the bombing of cities, what was and resulting civilian casualties were horrific. And now I think there's so much more effort placed to avoid civilian casualties. So I think that offers some optimism for humanity.
Well, we now decide that civilian casualties are called collateral damage. And when I think of how many, I don't know, went off, there it is, how many people, civilians, have been killed in both Iraq and Afghanistan, it's a tremendous number. It's over 100,000, from what I understand. That's not a small number. And we really, I don't know, I guess the answer is not to make a war.
There you go.
Hi, my name is Kelly. I just want to thank you for bringing up the part of story and how important that is in, like you're saying, the fables and the myths and just story about things and history and all of that. I think is really important to share with each other and with our youth, and that can just really resonate in many ways for them learning about these kinds of things. So, the human condition. So thank you.
Brings us to our offertory, and the offering is a sacrament of the free church. It's supported by the voluntary generosity of all who join with us. So the offering will now be received and given and received in grateful appreciation of our shared hopes and values.
Thank you.
congregational affirmation is in our hymnal, number 720. Please join with me. It's called We Remember Them. In the rising of the sun and in its going down, we remember them.
In the blowing of the wind and in the chill of winter, we remember them.
In the opening of buds and in the rebirth of spring, we remember them.
In the blueness of the sky and in the warmth of summer, we remember them.
In the rustling of leaves and in the beauty of autumn, we remember them.
In the beginning of the year and when it ends, we remember them.
When we are weary and in need of strength, we remember them.
When we are lost and sick at heart, we remember them.
When we have joys we yearn to share, we remember them.
So long as we live, they too shall live, but they are now part of us as we remember them.
Our closing hymn is number 411. Please rise as you're willing and able. And then there is a benediction after the hymn, which is not in the order of service.
Confidence, with gratitude, and with songs of praise. Amen.
Thank you. thank both of you for the opening. That really set the tone for the morning. And the Dona Nobis Pacem brought it to a wonderful conclusion. So the music was just really great today. It always is, but you know, you don't mind hearing it anyway,
no,
do you?
No, that's true.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good. Yes, it was.
Yes, we should.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm, sure. Something else in my